This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, June 27th, 2012. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. KUAF is supported by Fayetteville Athletic Club, offering guidance to fitness and healthy living through support, education, and positive direction. Information regarding the FAC's 9-acre facility, including tennis, aquatics, city hiking trails, and more, is available at fayac.com or 587-0500. KUAF is also supported by our contributing listeners and by Malco Theaters, offering birthday parties, special events, and group rates for individuals and businesses. More information available on the web at malco.com.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, a look behind the scenes at the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship. The LPGA tournament is taking place in Rogers this week. We'll learn what it takes to put this large event together.
And Pat Hall and friends stop by the Furman Garner Performance Studio for a conversation and a performance. Pat will perform at Mount Sequoia in Fayetteville next Tuesday as part of the Music on the Mountain series.
But first, voters in the Bentonville School District have rejected a millage increase designed to help construct a second high school. 58% of those who went to the polls cast ballots against the 6.7 mil increase. Nearly 21% of the district's 42,000 voters participated in the election.
The Arkansas Historic Preservation Program has awarded more than $1.6 million in grants for projects in 35 Arkansas counties through its County Courthouse Restoration Subgrant, Historic Preservation Restoration Grant, Certified Local Government Subgrant, and Main Street Downtown Restoration Grant programs. 13 Main Street Arkansas programs shared $65,000 in downtown revitalization grants, which are funded through the state real estate transfer tax and are available to certified Main Street programs for building rehabilitation, parks, streetscape improvements, and other design-related projects that will have major long-term impacts in the local Main Street area. Main Street programs in Eureka Springs, Ozark, Rogers, and Siloam Springs each received $5,000 grants through the program.
The Washington County Coroner's Office says an out-of-state landscaper working on a project on the University of Arkansas campus died because of a heat-related illness. A release from the University of Arkansas says the man was working for a company hired by the university to help construct new football practice fields. He became ill at the worksite Sunday and died at Washington Regional Medical Center on Monday night.
The National Weather Service expects high, very high, afternoon temperatures to remain part of the landscape for at least a week. Highs today are expected to be between 100 and 104. High readings will be in the high 90s or in excess of 100 degrees at least through Tuesday. A heat advisory has been issued for afternoons and early evenings for today and tomorrow. Both Fort Smith and Fayetteville set new highs for the date yesterday. Fort Smith's 104 yesterday broke the previous record of 102 degrees set in 1988. Yesterday's high of 100 in Fayetteville broke a record set in 1954. Today's forecast indicates records could be broken again today.
This is Ozarks at Large. Benton County residents last voted on the legal sale and manufacture of alcohol in their county in 1947. The matter could be in front of voters again this fall. Ozarks at Large's John Schlois has a report, and it will begin with Jennifer Sweet from the Rogers Historical Museum reading a newspaper article from 1947 detailing that previous vote.
An overwhelming majority of the people of Benton County are opposed to legalization of the manufacture and sale of alcoholic beverages, and those who like their little nip will have to depend upon Missouri and Washington County dealers for their supply for at least another 2 years. That fact was clearly demonstrated in Tuesday's local option election, initiated by wet forces after the county had been in the dry column for little more than 3 years. Nearly complete unofficial returns from over the county today show the Dries had won a major victory by a margin of 2,075 votes. The outcome of Tuesday's voting, for one thing, was the complete refutation of the argument heard recently that the county was voted dry in 1944 because veterans, then in service, had no opportunity to vote. A comparison of the results of Tuesday's voting with that of October 1944, when the county was voted dry by the slim margin of 90 votes, shows a sharp upswing of dry sentiment over the three-year period of drought.
It has been almost 65 years since Benton County residents have voted on the wet-dry issue, and a group, Keep Dollars in Benton County, aims to bring the issue back to voters this November. Marshall Nye, an attorney representing the group, said he thinks that they can get enough signatures to put the issue on the ballot.
Well, I certainly think it's achievable. I won't say that it's easily achievable because we have some interesting dynamics here. Number one is that we're required to get 38% of all registered voters.
According to the Benton County Clerk's Office, there were 108,305 registered voters in the county as of June 1. To achieve 38%, the Keep Dollars in Benton County campaign will have to get more than 41,000 signatures. The group has until August 8th to turn in their signatures. The Benton County Clerk's Office then has 10 days to certify the signatures before the measure can be placed on the November 6th ballot. Nye said the group has collected several thousand signatures already.
We're not publicly releasing the precise number, but we have in the past released a number, which was 35,000. I think we also publicly released our drive-up sign-up success, which was 800 additional signatures. So, you know, certainly I can tell you today that it's beyond 36,000 signatures.
The group plans to keep collecting signatures through the end of June. I asked Nye if he had heard of any opposition groups coming out against the measure.
The sheer numbers of people who have turned out to sign the petition, when you look at that on a percentage basis, I think it helps explain why we haven't seen an organized opposition, because I think people largely favor this.
It didn't take long for me to find one group that is against Benton County going wet. To be clear, the Keep Dollars in Benton County campaign has said their current mission is to get the issue on the ballot and let voters decide. They promote the issue based on a study from the University of Arkansas's Center for Business and Economic Research. That study, which was paid for by Keep Dollars in Benton County, estimated that the county residents would have spent nearly $78 million on alcohol sales in 2010 if the county was wet. The study estimated that would have amounted to about $780,000 in sales tax revenue for Benton County. The study's figures are based on the spending patterns of Benton County residents when they buy mixed drinks and wine at private clubs, because there's a tax on them. A private club license issued by the Alcohol Beverage Control allows restaurants to serve beer, wine, and mixed drinks. According to the ABC, there were 136 private club licenses in Benton County in early June. The spending at private clubs in Benton County is then compared to statewide spending at bars, restaurants, and private clubs. Three liquor stores in Washington County are currently allowed to sell alcohol to private clubs in Benton County.
The issue really is, where should the tax dollars go? And should we be paying our residents to drive to Washington County to make purchases at retail, to pay tax there, and then come back and mark it up and resell it in Benton County? And we don't think so. We think it makes more sense to have our money here.
Back to that opposition. I found it at the Global Outreach Center for Emmanuel Baptist Church in Rogers. Pastor Thomas Hatley said the church has about 1,500 members. Hatley said he researched the difference between wet and dry counties.
There's just no way that, John, we can look at the facts of what happens in Arkansas whenever a county goes wet and the changes that are made in that county, both economic as well as social, as well as crime and all that family destruction. You just can't ignore that and let something bad happen to your county. And so we just feel like we need to let folks know the truth and then let them decide from that.
Hatley said he's got bigger things to worry about than obsessing over political issues such as this one. The church has a large outreach program with several global missions. Hatley said he decided to do some research after being approached by his congregation.
When my people came to me and said, did you know there's a petition going around and they're trying to get this on the ballot and things of that nature, I decided I would do a little digging and find some people who had done some good research and be prepared to help my people.
Hatley claims that statistics from the Arkansas Crime Information Center shows wet counties have higher rates of murders, rapes, and robberies.
You know, I tell my ladies, isn't it great that we live in a county where there are no bars on the doors and windows of the convenience store, where you can go fill up your car at 11 o'clock at night as a woman and feel safe? There are counties touching us. You can't do that. You'd never send your wife to a convenience store where they sold liquor in an adjoining county to let your wife fill up with gas at midnight.
Are you talking about like Washington County?
Yeah, exactly.
Hatley said that a wet Benton County would be a very different county than residents know today.
If you love life and people and families more than you love money, you should vote this down.
If Keep Dollars in Benton County does get enough signatures by the August 8th deadline, the issue will appear on the November 6th ballot. For Ozarks at Large, I'm John Schlois.
frontier from New Orleans. I found that town to me. Needed a place to stand tall. And I found it in Arkansas. I run out of beer, wanted some more. I went to the grocery store. I said, where do you keep your beer? They said, 40 miles from here.
Earlier this week at Pinnacle Country Club in Rogers, there were birds chirping, shuttle vans and golf carts whizzing by, and the faint sound of an electric saw could be heard in the distance. Yes, it's once again time for the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship presented by P&G. Organizers of the annual LPGA tournament estimate about 25,000 spectators will attend the event this week. But before golf enthusiasts can watch athletes take their first swing, there is a lot of work that has to be done to prepare for the tournament. David Shoemaker was hired as the tournament director during the first competition in 2007 and has held the position ever since.
I'm the tournament director, so I'm responsible for managing the tournament staff and really everything operationally that goes into building the tournament, whether that's structures, transportation. We have 700 volunteers that are out here during the week, all doing various jobs that help make the tournament possible. And then on the other end of that, we've also got to raise the revenue to pay for the tournament. So there's a big sales and marketing aspect in order to get people to buy sponsorship, tickets, and all the things that financially make the tournament possible.
So you're kind of the guy.
I'm a guy here. There's quite a few of us, but we've got a good team here of people in various roles. So we've got people that manage the volunteer program, people that manage all the operational and logistical pieces, people that manage the sales support, and really it's just kind of overseeing all of those aspects and giving those people the tools to do their individual jobs that make the tournament possible.
Shoemaker says he'll have to sleep fast this week while working on the tournament. Shoemaker works for Octagon Global Events, a division of Octagon, the world's largest sports and entertainment representation and marketing agency. The organization has an office in Northwest Arkansas with a staff of 7, but people from Octagon's offices across the country will head to Rogers to help with the event, so there will be closer to 20 employees in town this week. Shoemaker explains that each stop on the tour has a local tournament staff to handle things that are unique to that location, such as transportation and catering. However, there are certain things that the LPGA handles every week at each stop.
The LPGA supplies all the rules officials that are out on the golf course. They supply media staff that kind of coordinate with our media staff. Contract with the Golf Channel and help with the television production of the event. And then they've got other roles, player services, business affairs. So the LPGA will have a staff of probably 10 to 12 here this week as well.
With all of the preparation for such a large week-long event, surely this has become a year-round job for some people.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely for all of us. People say, when do you start planning the next one? And the answer is probably a month ago. So I'm riding around all week, with our staff going, next year we could look at doing this differently. So we're already planning for 2013 while 2012 is still going on.
If you're thinking to yourself that a year couldn't have passed since the last Northwest Arkansas Championship, you're right. It hasn't. Last year's tournament wrapped up in September. The 2012 event has been moved to the last week in June because of the Summer Olympics in London. Tournament director David Shoemaker explains the date change has resulted in a tight turnaround for securing sponsorships, which he says you must do before potential sponsors have to turn in their annual budgets. He also says you have to have sponsors secured before you can see what you can do with next year's tournament. As the tournament chairman, Jay Allen helps spread the word about the event and get sponsors.
You do have to have sponsors to fund an event like this, and there's a lot of work done to do that. We have probably 50 or more sponsors. We need 700 volunteers to put this event on, so recruiting them over the course of a year and training them, that takes a lot of time. Just what you see, the course getting set up, all the things, that you have to build around the tournament. We have hospitality suites on 18. We have a party deck on 17. We have bleachers out there. There are concession stands. And it takes a lot to put it on, and there's just work going on all the time.
And that work doesn't stop just because you're in the middle of an interview.
If you need to get that.
Actually, can I get this?
Yeah, yes, please.
Steve? Good, thanks. I'm in the middle of an interview, but I saw you calling. Can I give a quick second to chat?
That's Congressman Steve Womack calling. Last year, he participated in a special 9/11 program on the 18th Green. Although there was special attention paid to service personnel in 2011, each year the tournament gives back to the community. This year, tournament officials expect to give about $400,000 to local charities. With so many different aspects to this event, delegation is key.
There's so many moving parts that you really no one person can do even come close to doing everything. So that's why you do need a good base of volunteers who can almost supervise themselves. They know how to do it. All the encore stuff going on, but there are a few people that are kind of watching everything, but nobody can do it all.
Another person who helps coordinate this event is volunteer chairman Jim Taylor.
We have two general chairmen, Kim Ellis and myself, and my responsibility is everything that's on the course and has to do with the golf. Her responsibility is everything that has to do with player services, volunteer services, transportation, and so I take care of the golf. She takes care of everything else. And so we coordinate with all the other volunteer chairmen and vice chairs. We interact with with all the volunteers. This week we're under a heat advisory, so I have a huge ice chest strapped to the back of my golf cart, and I'm making sure that everyone's hydrated. And there's no really specific job duties. It's just whatever needs to be done.
In the past, Taylor has volunteered in a variety of capacities, including Caddy Master, which is one of the many available volunteer positions.
We have people that help with food. We have volunteers that do nothing but help manage the golf cart fleet that's here this week. We have volunteers that do nothing but make sure that there's water and beverages and ice on the golf course. We have volunteers that take care of player services. That's where anything that the players need in their locker room or while they're here, if they get a special need, we make sure that gets taken care of. We have volunteers on the range. We have the driving range volunteers get here about 5:10 to 5:15 in the morning. And the players are hitting balls out there under floodlights. We bring in temporary lighting. And those guys may not leave until 8:30 or 9 o'clock at night, but they're back here at 5 o'clock the next morning. They're the first ones here and the last ones to leave. We have people that do scoring, take care of all the scoreboards. They're here a little later in the week, but it is unbelievable how many volunteers it takes to put an event like this on. 700.
This year, those volunteers range in age from 16 to 83 years old. Taylor says several are return participants, and there is some amount of training involved for volunteers, depending on their designated position. Some people who have helped out year after year include local residents who host players in their homes while the athletes are in town. Taylor says the easiest way for someone to become a volunteer is by visiting the tournament's website.
There's several different ways that you can become a volunteer. The main way is to just log online to NorthwestArkansasChampionship.com, and you can click on volunteer, and then you just fill out the form, show us what your interests are, what you would like to volunteer doing, your schedule, when you would like to do it, and you can be a volunteer. And there's a small fee associated with it, but you get a lot in return. You get two great golf shirts, you get a cap, you get free meals while you're here, water, we take care of you, plus an appreciation party afterwards. But in addition to all that, you get to see some great golf. You're up close and personal with the players or with the caddies or just other volunteers or the fans.
The annual golf tournament involves hundreds of people, and without a doubt, some of the biggest contributors to the event are the volunteers.
And I just can't say enough about the volunteers. They are what make the tournament. You can do all the planning you want. You can have everything put in place, but if you don't have someone to execute the plan, then it just won't happen. And they're the reason that it flows so smoothly and seamless. It seems like it's seamless.
More information is available at nwachampionship.com.
We conclude our visits with University of Arkansas athletes competing for spots on U.S. Olympic teams today. The U.S. track and field trials continue through Sunday in Eugene, Oregon, and one of the last UA athletes to attempt to get a trip to London is hurdler Caleb Cross.
I hope this approaches like any other race. I mean, I just turned 21 like a month ago, so I'm there now. I'm not a junior anymore, so I'm going to be hopefully competing it against them many more times. So I'm just hopefully just going to this like any other race and just do the best I can do.
During his first 3 years at the University of Arkansas, Caleb Cross has become an All-American in both sprinting and hurdling events. That follows a high school career at Newport High School when he won state championships in hurdling events. But the U.S. Olympic trials will be the stiffest competition he's ever been part of.
I would think I would be nervous, but I'm just really more excited. I mean, I obviously got the chance to represent the USA in the World Juniors 2 years ago, so I kind of know what it feels like to get some international competition, but being able to be in Oregon and against professional athletes is just the dream come true. You know, this ever since I was like 5 years old, I wanted to be a track runner. So other people wanted to run, play basketball or play football, but I've always wanted to run track, and this is just a dream come true, really.
His personal record for the 400-meter hurdles, 50.3 seconds. His goal for this week's U.S. trials is to break 50, go under 50 seconds. His goal since the NCAA national meet, during which he also ran other events for the Razorbacks, has been to shave off those 0.3 of a second. Caleb Cross says in an event so technical as the 400-meter hurdles, erasing 0.3 of a second is done as much with the mind as with the legs.
Especially in the 400 hurdles, it's a pretty technical race. I mean, it's really just being technical and being, it's obviously very physical, but it's very being very mental, even when you're tired. So that's my plan right now.
Even if he meets his goal and runs under 50 seconds, that will not guarantee him one of the top three spots and thus qualify him for the U.S. team bound for London. But if he doesn't go to the Olympics this summer, that's still okay, since just getting to the Olympic trials has been a goal since he could count his age on his hands. That's when he was watching legendary sprinter Michael Johnston setting records at the 1996 Olympics.
Watching Michael Johnston run in gold shoes, and like ever since then, it's always what I wanted to do. And even like I only played basketball or football just so I could get the track. So this has always been just what I want to do.
Caleb Cross will participate in the first heat in the 400-meter hurdles, which is scheduled for Thursday in Eugene, Oregon.
Next time on the TED Radio Hour, transforming Africa in the 21st century.
Africa has immense opportunities that never navigate through the web of despair and helplessness that the Western media largely presents to its audience.
We'll hear some big ideas emerging all across Africa next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
The TED Radio Hour, Saturdays at noon here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
This is an Ozarks at Large Wednesday edition. With me on the phone from the Big Easy is Becca Martin Brown. She's features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. How goes it in New Orleans?
As I just said to you before we went on the air, vacationing with my best friend and her husband is not easy. It's a marathon. And you can always go someplace nice and cool, like the National World War II Museum. And here's the reason I'm going to tell you about this is because I'm hoping some of our museum friends are listening. This is a cool program. On Wednesday morning, one of their curators gets out all of these things that soldiers would have used, both American and German, during the war, and some reproduction, some original, and visitors can pick up and try on helmets and uniforms and boots and packs and find out that, you know, if the exhibit label says an infantryman's pack weighed 40 pounds, they can find out how much 40 pounds is on your back.
And you're moving, and you're perhaps being put into the face of danger.
I think this is an incredibly cool program. Of course, everything else about the World War II Museum is cool, including the air conditioning and the film you can go to, which is nice. But this is a really great program. It happens every Wednesday there from 9 to noon until the end of the year. So.
Okay, good tip.
There's your tip for New Orleans, and here's what's going on in Northwest Arkansas. I love the free movies. I love the free movies. And today is Aladdin at 1 o'clock at the Boone County Library in Harrison.
Mm-hmm.
At 2 o'clock, there's Music with Shaky Bugs at the Rogers Public Library. It says for ages birth to 7, but I'd elbow my way in.
All right. Just stand in the back if you're tall.
Yes. The animal extravaganza happens at the Rock Street entrance to the Fayetteville Public Library at 2. You guys can run over and see the Barnyard Buddies Petting Zoo and a mobile aquarium.
Right. And this mobile aquarium, it's what, the State Game and Fish, I think?
Uh-huh.
And I've seen it before when it was at the Janet Huckabee location south of Fort Smith, and it's fantastic what they have inside of it.
And we're not talking aquarium like in your dentist's office.
No.
And tonight, original one-person shows written, directed, and acted by University of Arkansas undergrad drama students at 7:30 at the Nadine Baum Studios. It's part of their summer new play series. And long-form comedy improv follows. It's $5.
And these are the one-act plays that we kind of visited in their infancy a couple weeks ago on Ozarks at Large.
So it will be great fun, and y'all won't miss me at all till tomorrow.
All right, Becca, stay as cool as you can.
Thanks, Kyle.
Thank you. This is Ozarks at Large. Next Tuesday night, that's July 3rd, Pat Hall will take the stage at Clapp Auditorium for the Music on the Mountain series. Pat is billing the concert to benefit the restoration of the venue as Pat Hall and Friends. Earlier this month, Pat and two of his friends, John Stiers and Ezra Eidlett, who will be part of the show, came to the Furman Garner Performance Studio to talk with me. Pat says the concert on Mount Sequoia is one of his favorite gigs of the year.
Yeah, I'm very excited to get to play at Mount Sequoia. It's the yearly concert that makes me finish writing the six or so songs that I've been working on all year. So
you're better with a deadline? Is that what you're saying?
I'm always better with a deadline. But the other thing is that Mount Sequoia Music on the Mountain is a listening venue, and as opposed to a selling beer venue or a dancing venue or just a out in the park having fun venue, it's a venue where people actually come to listen to the songs, listen to the singer-songwriter, and it's just a beautiful thing. Last year's performance was one of the top two concerts that I've ever given, because the music is really amplified and enhanced by the audience paying attention. I don't really know how to explain that, but they just give you an energy that makes you a notch better than you usually are. And that's one of the few venues in Fayetteville where it's truly a listening venue. I'm sure Walton Arts Center is definitely a listening venue, but you got to be pretty good to play at Walton Arts Center, I think.
When you talk about, you know, the audience, I mean, the audience is there specifically to hear you. Like you said, it's not, there's not a TV on behind you. There's not, just knowing that gives you more energy, or is it the actual response that you get from the audience?
I think there's an energy that's created, a symbiotic relationship that happens between the performers and the audience when they're truly hanging on everything that's going on stage, and it real, and you feel it on stage, or at least I feel it on stage, and the guys that play with me, I know they feel it too, and then we feel it from each other, and then it just builds, and the whole thing gets better than what it really should be, is what happens a lot of the times. Kind of that the collective is better than the sum of the parts, or whatever that saying.
Well, I've talked to other people who've played this series, and they say it's as if the audience is there with you. It's not like you're performing for them, you're performing with them.
With them is a good way to put that. It's like they become an integral part of the show and the relationship that develops there. And that's the thing that's so special about music to me, is it's the relationship. I guess at the core level, it's the relationship of notes to each other, but then it becomes a relationship of musicians to each other, and then it becomes the relationship of the music in the room, and then it becomes the relationship of all that plus the audience and how they're taking it in, and what kind of energy they're feeding back to you. And the Clapp Auditorium, where Music on the Mountain happens, is, I think, potentially one of the best rooms sound-wise in Northwest Arkansas. It's one of the funnest rooms to play because the floor slopes up. So when you're sitting on stage, you get to see every face in the audience. And it's just a really, really interesting shaped room with a nice stage. It needs to be redone, and that's what Music on the Mountain is doing right now.
Proceeds.
The proceeds, the $5 contribution. doesn't go towards the food, which Greenhouse Grill is so nice to offer, and Jam and Java Coffee and Rick's Bakery offering desserts. They're giving that to kind of entice people up there as well. But then the $5 donation that's suggested goes to refurbishing that room, hopefully making it one of the premier 400-seat auditoriums in Northwest Arkansas.
It's billed as Pat Hall and Friends.
Yeah.
Who are the friends?
Well, in the studio with me today is John Stiers, who's been a professional musician most of his life, who's playing keyboard with me, although I think he made most of his fame and fortune doing bass and singing. And a little guy, a little friend of mine named Ezra Idlett, who's how many Grammys have you been nominated for?
We've been nominated for four.
Four.
That, which, as my partner Keith is fond of saying, makes us four-time losers.
Four. it's kind of like being always the bridegroom. And I think this is going to be the year. This is going to be the year that trout fishing in America. Yeah. Keith and Ezra are going to win a Grammy. I feel certain about that.
Well, and I want to talk a little bit later about the cajon, because, James, you built that, right? The percussion
Correct.
Instrument we're going to hear. But would it be okay? You've written some new songs.
I've written some new songs. Let me go on quickly to say that Andy Goodson
yes.
will be playing with us on the mountain. And he sent his alter ego, which will be posted later on. They're going to use that in the promo and the photo that we're doing this afternoon. Andy couldn't be here, but he did blow up his face and put it on a two-dimensional cutout of Elvis, which makes me feel real comfortable with him looming over Ezra's head back there. That's going to be in the he's going to be one of the people playing with us. Noah Menard is going to play lead guitar with me for one set, and Rod Williams is going to play lead guitar with me for another set. And both those guitar players have been in many, many bands in Northwest Arkansas. So the reason that I asked my friends to come play with me is because these are the people that have, on multiple levels, really supported me and helped me to become a better musician and to keep writing songs and to keep trying to perfect my art to what degree it has been. So I owe them a lot. I owe these guys particularly, and another handful of guys who couldn't be with me on stage for one reason or another, but they mean a lot to me. They're tremendously supportive and tremendously inspiring to me.
Well, can we hear something?
Sure.
What are you going to play?
Sure. This is kind of autobiographical. It's called Time Stands Still for No One. To die before their time.
to no one.
Gentlemen, that was great. Yeah. That was great. You say that's somewhat autobiographical?
Yeah.
Is it ever scary?
And that's actually an old song. That song is from probably 1980.
Is it ever scary writing an autobiographical?
Oh, always, okay. always. Yeah, you know, songwriting for me started out as this therapeutic thing that I did when I was depressed and feeling horrible and to kind of get a lot of those bad feelings out. Consequently, all of my early songs are these really horrid, depressive, sad, minor things that, you know, nobody wants to hear, including me. But it kept me alive during that period of my life. And
well, I wouldn't call that one depressed. I think there's a bit of melancholy.
Yeah. That one's just more kind of like real life. Yeah.
Well, the last autobiographical song he wrote, the police came to his house afterwards.
We try not to disclose all the details and everything. It's kind of like I've really been looking forward to doing a radio interview for two reasons. One, my wife tells me I have a face for radio, a perfect face for radio. And the other is I figure if the camera adds 10 pounds, then the radio ought to take 20 off, right?
It can take 20 off. For me, it adds 6 inches. Well, let me ask your friends a couple of questions here. Tell me about this cajon that is the percussion we're hearing.
What you're hearing is a box. I think cajon means box. And John Stiers, who's playing keyboards, built this one. This is the second one that he's built me. It's a lot larger. And what's really cool about this instrument is it offers a lot of different tones for backing up acoustic instruments. It's not overpowering and still provides a real rhythmic punch. Real good bass drum tone. Snare kind of a sound. And it just seems to function really well with acoustic music. Not a lot of cymbal work with this. And I hear a good reason for that. It seems to make songs sound really good. Phil Collins did a lot of stuff with no cymbals. And it's just a nice way to play drums. And I've always been a closet drummer. That's one of the things about Pat that I really love. He seems to be the guy that gets us all out of our common, everyday, ordinary ways of doing things and encourages us to do things that are different. You know, John is a professional bass player. He's playing keyboards. I play guitar and sing with Trout Fishing in America, but I'm playing cajon with Pat. And I've watched Pat take people that have played guitar for maybe 6 months and put them on stage with him in the same band, bringing them up there. He's sort of enabler is the wrong word, but an encouraging personality, and I really do love that about working with Pat.
I'm sure that makes it for a fun experience, too.
Yeah. And these guys, I tell you, when you surround yourself with Class A professional musicians, it really makes you sound a whole lot better, which is, you know, one of the reasons why I like surrounding myself with these guys.
John, the way we have the studio set up today, you're kind of far away from a microphone, but I want to ask you about making the cajon. This is the second one you've made for Ezra. What's the secret to getting the good tones?
Actually, Ezra and I kind of collaborated on that one. I built one before. Actually, I built Andy Goodson one, and I got the plans off the internet, and the first one wasn't all that great, but I got with Ezra, and we talked about why it wasn't all that great, and we refined it to where they sound a lot better now, so I plan to make more.
It was so surprising. I had bought a cajon on the internet. I just knew I wanted to play one, and we were at a jam session at Pat's house, and John saw me play it, and the next time I saw John, he said, "Is this what you're playing?" And he had a cajon. I'm like, yeah. that's pretty much it. He said, "What can I do to make it better?" And I said, "Well, maybe this or that," and he came up with another one that was better, and just beautiful, beautiful woodwork.
I think your words on the first one were burn it. No.
Not exactly.
No. Kindlin. We named that one Kindlin.
And I guess we should describe, Ezra's actually sitting on it, and there's a seat on, and you're on top of it, and then...
And there's a hole in the side for the sound to come out.
I play it with my hands and brushes. Some people play it with just their hands. It's a different sound with just your hands. That's just your hand. But the brushes kind of give it that more of a snare...
Plus, the way you palm the brushes, you can get different tones.
Pat, what you mentioned that writing songs has helped save you, help keep you going. What possesses you to write songs now?
You know, one of my brothers, I think probably a little bit disgusted with all the melancholy downer songs that I wrote in my early 20s, said, "Do you ever write songs when you're happy?" And I had to think about that, and I said, "No, I don't guess I ever do." He said, "Next time you're feeling really good, why don't you go write a song?" and I started writing happier songs. Also, I was real opposed in my younger days to using real standard 1-4-5 chord progressions and standard songwriting methods. And so some of the songs are very esoteric and weird. And we'll play some of those on stage at the performance, because they're interesting and fun to listen to, but they're not as fun to hear and play as the more traditional 1-4-5 chord progression songs. So that became a challenge in my later life, was why are those things the way they are? And to me, it's a kind of a representation of something that maybe is a much more real and deeper. I guess string theorists talk about this too, how everything is maybe just a vibration and harmonies of vibrations and coordinations of harmonies of vibrations building on each other to make the world around us. And so, I think there's a reason why our ear tends towards those 1-4-5 chord progressions and why we think, oh, that sounds great. But maybe not. Oriental music doesn't do that. So maybe that's all cultural. But I've been studying in the last 10 years more traditional chord progressions and ways of writing songs that's been new to me, because I tried to stay away from that for the first 20 years that I wrote songs.
Well, could we hear something else?
Yes, absolutely.
What will we be hearing here?
How Can I Miss You if you won't ever leave?
No, John. let's do something. Now, Kyle, you really won't sing with us? If we do a sing-along, you won't do any? You could cut it out, edit your...
No. Editing equipment doesn't work quite like that.
It doesn't?
I'm sure there are very...
It's just one word.
The word?
Huma huma nuku nuku apu a-a.
Okay, well, we're going to... Here's the thing.
That's just one word.
You almost had me.
I almost had you.
We're going to have to go a little bit easier than that.
We'll see if we can break it down for you when we get in there. I guess I ought to tell you that my in-laws live in Kauai, Hawaii. And if you're going to have in-laws, that's a great place to keep them. You don't mind going there once a year, and they don't just drop in to see you. I've got a beautiful niece who's one of my favorite relatives. Her name is Yara. And she's featured a little bit in this song, and it's called Yara's Song. Or the subtitle is Huma Huma Nuku Nuku Apu Apa. In the last of the states, at the end of the chain, is the oldest of the islands, and Kauai is her name. Kauai got the sun, Kauai got the waves, in Kauai hang loose and enjoy the day. Kauai got the tarot and the spirit of aloha, and a little reef fish with a big name, Huma Huma Nuku Nuku Apu A-A. That's it right there, Kyle. That's what you're going to sing in just a minute. You can get it. We'll break it down for you. This side of Hyena, just past Honolulu, for the meal of your life, stop in at the Mediterranean Gourmet, where yarrow's not a flower, no, yarrow's not a spice, where yarrow is a beautiful woman and the owner's wife. Kauai got the beaches and the beautiful shore. In Kauai, a body could not really ask for more. Singing Huma Huma Nuku Nuku Apu A-A, Huma Huma Nuku Nuku Apu A-A, Huma Huma Nuku Nuku Apu A-A.
He's having a little trouble with that thing, John. Maybe we ought to break that down for him.
Sing hoo moo, hoo moo. Sing hoo moo, hoo moo.
Hoo moo, hoo moo.
Sing hoo.
Keep it up now, boys.
Kauai got the sun. Kauai got the rain. In Kauai, hang loose and enjoy the days. Kauai got the beaches and the beautiful shore. In Kauai, a body could not really ask for more. Singing hooma hooma doo doo apu ah ah, hooma hooma doo doo apu ah ah, hooma hooma doo doo apu ah ah, hooma hooma doo doo apu ah ah.
That's your debut, Kyle.
You're singing on the radio. That's excellent.
It's a fantastic song. That's a fantastic song, is it not? And that is the state fish of Hawaii, I believe.
It is.
Yes.
See, he knew that. That's great.
I had a long conversation with my nephew and niece a couple months ago because it was actually my niece who, for her second grade class, had to pick a state and tell everything about it. And she told me that the state fish was this name. She'll be thrilled to know that it came into.
Excellent. Maybe you can play that song.
That's a beautiful song.
Thank you.
I absolutely adore that song.
And see, that song's just 1-4-5 over and over again. Musically, that's as simple as it gets. So, you know, originally I started out writing this very weird, esoteric chord progressions that were impossible to follow. Jam breakers, we call them now. And I have, over the years, tried to figure out, What about simple songs is fun and good and interesting and all that kind of stuff? So,
we should tell people that Pat Hall and Friends will be at Clapp Auditorium, Mount Sequoia. That is Tuesday, July 3rd, July 4th Eve.
Yes.
And as you mentioned, the proceeds go to Clapp Auditorium. And where can people will you have the CDs?
We'll have the CDs at the show, and we'll be happy to sell the CDs for a very reasonable price.
Ezra, John, and Pat, thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, thank you.
Pat Hall, John Stiers, and Ezra Eidlett will be joined by other friends Tuesday night, July 3rd, for the latest concert in the Music on the Mountain series on Mount Sequoia. The music begins at 7, and proceeds help the restoration of Clapp Auditorium, and a $5 donation is requested. Kyle's conversation was recorded earlier this month inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. They'll be back to play one more song on the weekend edition of Ozarks at Large, Sunday morning at 9 on KUAF.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 27th of June, 2012. It's the birthday of the poet Lucille Clifton, born in Depew, New York, 1936. It's the birthday of Alice McDermott, born Brooklyn, New York, 1953, author of 6 novels, including The Bigamist's Daughter and Charming Billy. It's the 97th birthday of writer and radical activist Grace Lee Boggs, born Providence, 1915. Her parents were immigrants from Guangdong Province in China. Her father ran a Chinese restaurant in downtown Providence. Family moved to New York City, and the girl won a scholarship to Barnard, studied philosophy there. She went on to get her Ph.D. at Bryn Mawr, and because she was Chinese, she could not find a job, not even at department stores. So she headed to Chicago. She got a job at the University of Chicago Philosophy Library. $10 a week. She lived in a basement filled with rats, wore the same clothes every day. The rats were so bad, she went to the Southside Tenants Organization, started working with the black community in Chicago, became a community organizer, and a few years later she met a black auto worker from Detroit, Jimmy Boggs, recently divorced, 6 kids. He was 2 hours late for their first date. She put on a Louis Armstrong record. Boggs said he hated Louis Armstrong. But by the end of the evening, he asked her to marry him, and she accepted, and they were married for 40 years. Grace Lee Boggs wrote a number of books, including Revolution and Evolution in the 20th century, and most recently, The Next American Revolution, published when she was 95. And it's the birthday of Helen Keller, born in Tuscumbia, Alabama, 1880. The story of her childhood is well known. She got sick, an illness that left her blind and deaf. Her teacher, Ann Sullivan, managed to communicate the letters for water while running water from the pump on the little girl's hand. And she started to learn. She was very bright. She went off to Radcliffe College. She became a celebrity. She met Mark Twain. She became a popular lecturer. She advocated for others with disabilities. But she became a radical activist along the way, joined the Socialist Party, and then the Industrial Workers of the World. FBI opened a file on her. She helped found the American Civil Liberties Union. Helen Keller, who said, "No one has ever given me a good reason why we should obey unjust laws." Here's a poem for today, a poem from 1875 by William Ernest Henley, Invictus. Out of the night that covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeonings of chance, my head is bloody but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade, and yet the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. William Ernest Henley's Invictus. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by Goddard College, offering low residency education for adult learners since 1963, now offering both bachelor's and master's degrees in Port Townsend and Seattle, Washington. Learn more at goddard.edu. Edited by Noah Smith, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for KUAF comes from Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, hosting American Encounters, Thomas Cole and the Narrative Landscape, through August 13th. The exhibit features six paintings of distinctive style, influences, and impact on other American artists. The exhibition is part of a multi-year collaboration with Crystal Bridges, the Louvre, and others. More information is available online at crystalbridges.org. The June Arts Festival in Bentonville continues until this Saturday, June 30th. The celebration includes public art installations, visual art shows, gallery walks, live music, culinary events, theater performances, hands-on kids art programs, and more. Information is available at downtownbentonville.org or 254-0254.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Cane Hill.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Thanks so much for listening.
Another new show tomorrow at noon.
Have a good day.